Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Marriage Lifeline. A married couple who are on the brink of divorce tells us about a church-sponsored program that rescued and healed their union and that of thousands of other couples whose marriages were heading for the rocks. And the Vatican Centuries. Listen to the fifth episode in our series that looks at the lives and legends of the people and places that went into the making of the Vatican over the ages. In many Western countries nowadays, the institution of the family is facing unprecedented attacks and difficulties, with more and more marriages breaking up. But amidst the doom and gloom, I came to hear about an inspirational marriage rescue program that offers a lifeline to couples in crisis. Let's hear my report.
I just called to say I love you.
In the US, over 40% of marriages end in divorce. That's the depressing reality borne out by the statistics, and it's an indication of the daunting challenges many couples face in trying to keep their marriage afloat in today's secularized and high-pressured society. Successful marriages, however, don't work on autopilot, at least not for long. They need care and nurturing, and it's especially vital that the spouses keep the lines of communication open between the two of them. How many husbands or wives argue frequently or feel frustrated, hurt, or angry with their spouse? It's in situations like this that all too many couples believe that the only solution is to go down the path towards separation and divorce. But if married couples in crisis know where to look, help is at hand, and that help can often save a marriage. Originating in Canada, Retrovie is a program offered by Catholic couples and a priest to couples with marriage problems. Thousands of couples headed for cold, unloving relationships or divorce have successfully overcome their marital problems by attending a Retrovie program held in various countries throughout the world. The program consists of a weekend experience combined with a series of 6 to 12 post-weekend sessions. The main emphasis of the Retrovie program is on communications in marriage between husband and wife. It gives the couple the opportunity to rediscover each other and examine their lives together in a new and positive way. The teams of couples who give presentations during the Retrovie programs have themselves successfully weathered a crisis in their own marriage. And it's their success in renewing and saving their own marriage that provides help and encouragement to the couples attending the program. Frank and Julie Laborda and Father Watt Bracken are American, and all three of them are volunteer international coordinators for Retrovie. Frank and Julie are married with four children and live in Madison, Wisconsin. They were pointed in the direction of Retrovie at a time when their own marriage was on the rocks and they were on the brink of divorce. They spoke to me about some of the reasons why their marriage was failing and how attending a Retrovie program helped to renew and heal it.
We had several problems, basically a severe miscommunication and working opposite schedules.
So the communication issues led to us living quite separate lives. And as we worked different shifts in our work schedule, she was working days and I was working nights. And I began an affair with a woman I worked with and spent 9 months in an extramarital affair with a woman from work. Our marriage obviously went further downhill after that. And we were separated twice and 5 weeks away from our final divorce when we found Retrovie.
And how did you find it?
My mother-in-law, Julie's mother, gave her an article from a magazine in the States about the program, and I called right away and registered us for the weekend experience.
And, was it really quite dramatic, the turnaround?
It was extremely dramatic for me, but I still had a lot of fear and panic and trust issues. But it gave us hope because the couples that presented the weekend, the couples on the team, had been through misery even worse than ours. And we thought, if they can make it, maybe there's some hope for us too. And it was very grace-filled. You could feel the presence of God. And the team priest was there as well. And we wondered what the priest would have to say about marriage. But it was very grace-filled. And I was overcome with the hope that they offered.
And weren't the majority of the people on this program Catholic? Because you say you're open to all religions or none, or those who have none.
Yes, I think on our weekend, a great majority of them were. But you're right that couples that come to Retrovi come with all different types of faith or no faith whatsoever.
Now, the program consists, I gather, of a weekend experience, and then this is followed up with 6 to 12 week post-weekend sessions over a period of 3 months. Did you already find after that first weekend that you were discovering where things were going wrong or where to pick up the pieces, or was it more of a question of learning to trust?
I think I knew where things were going wrong before, but I was always pointing a finger of blame at Frank. So the weekend helped me realize what role I played in the deterioration of our marriage. And then the follow-up sessions were integral in change because the post-sessions offered a chance to look more deeply at specific issues like trust, conflict, sex, forgiveness. And so that was really where the bulk of the change occurred throughout the post sessions as well.
I think for me, the weekend showed me what could be right about our relationship again and reminded me of the reasons that I fell in love with Julie in the first place and why we were together from the start of our relationship rather than showing me what had been wrong, because you could see that in our behavior with one another on a daily basis. But being able to talk with Julie and communicate with her on a whole different level over the course of that weekend and then the post sessions really showed me what was right about our relationship again.
Is it a prerequisite that for people who go to Retrovi that both couples want to save their marriage? Because presumably if somebody's already given up on it, then it's hopeless.
Well, in our case, Julie had given up. This was her way of checking this one last thing off of her list of things to do before the divorce was final. So no, I don't think that both couples have to be committed to saving their relationship. As long as they're committed to spending the time on the weekend together, it could change their relationship just by being there together.
Each couple is asked to participate fully in the entire weekend and the follow-up sessions. But we would be lying if everyone who came said, yes, I'm 100% committed to making this marriage work. But over the course of the weekend, most of them change their minds and decide, yes, this is worth saving.
Father Walt Bracken is a Catholic priest from Chicago. And along with Frank and Julie, he gave his viewpoint about the strengths of the Retrovi program.
Before I go into what happens on the weekend, I think what is key, and Frank and Julie have already mentioned this, is the hope that is given on the weekend. The couples come there with a sense of hopelessness with regard to their own relationship. By listening to the stories of other couples, they recognize the fact that other people can go through difficulties as well and come out of those difficulties on the other side with a great deal of hope for their relationship. I think that is the beauty of a peer ministry. Peer ministry allows couples to tell their story of their misery, their story of their hopelessness, and how they moved to a sense of hope. And this is done simply on the weekend by 3 different couples and a priest giving a series of presentations. And the idea is that the couple gives a presentation with a priest. After that, the couples who are participating in the weekend are given a question to reflect. They do some writing, they come together, and then they share with regard to this. And through these series of presentations during the course of the weekend, couples are able to communicate with themselves much more deeply. What we tell the couples on a Friday night is we are not there to solve their problems or to work on their problems. What we do is work on their communication, so that once they begin to relate to each other and to communicate to each other, then they begin to solve their own problems on how they choose to solve them.
Do you often find, in fact, that it's this lack of communication between the spouses that is at the root of these marital problems?
Yes, very often communication. So it's teaching a process of communication. That basically is what the weekend is about, as well as the follow-up sessions.
We spend a lot of time talking about how we're feeling, so we emphasize that a marriage is not just about an exchange of information, but about how you feel about what's going on in your life and the issues that create misery in your relationship. And it's important to note that couples that attend Retrovi are not asked to share their problems with the other attending couples. They're not asked to air their dirty laundry with the team.
But do they nonetheless?
Sometimes they might pull you aside and share something with you personally, but not out amongst the group. It's not allowed. It's not asked for in the group. They're asked to privately reflect. At first, I questioned the faith aspect of Retrovi because as our marriage started to deteriorate, so did my faith, or at least my practice of the faith. I started going to church less. I started wondering if God was going to send me to hell for filing for divorce. And I wondered if the weekend would be not punishment, but condescending because I was so hopeless. But I found it to be very gentle, and it opened my eyes to the grace and mercy that God had for me. And it started to show me that I was capable of giving forgiveness, but that I was also in need of asking for forgiveness. And that was one of the greatest gifts that Retrovi gave me, was that it seemed as though I tripped some sort of wire, and God really spoke to me through the Retrovi program.
Now, I don't know whether you keep statistics, but do you happen to know roughly what percentage of the couples who come to Retrovi do manage to save their marriage? If you have any idea at all on how successful this program is?
We've seen somewhere in the neighborhood of 75% to 80% of marriages at least continue on. Successful marriages, probably half. But they stay in their relationship up to 80% of the time.
That's quite a high percentage.
It's a very high percentage. And it's an experience that we see over and over on the weekend from Friday night to Sunday.
And what do these couples who, as you say, who successfully stay in their marriage after attending a program at Retrovi, what do they put it down to, this success of the program?
First and foremost, the sharing of each other, the peer ministry part of it, and then secondly, the communication tool that we use in the program to share with one another on our feeling level rather than just on a factual level.
And do some of you, these couples that attend this Retrovi, do they actually often become friends afterwards and stay in touch afterwards?
Absolutely. There's a part of the program called CORE, Continuing Our Retrovi Experience, that's in most places is a monthly support group. It becomes a social gathering and a way to stay in touch with people who are working in the same direction.
Our best friends are Retrovi friends.
And the stigma that goes along with being in trouble in your marriage is gone. Because of the pretense is gone. You're able to share on a more difficult and more open level with one another. That whole sense of being alone is washed away.
I just called to say I love you.
But what real-life anecdotes do they have of couples attending the Retrovi program whose marriage seemed doomed to collapse?
I can give you a story about a couple that we know. They were having difficulty. Of course, that's why they were on the weekend originally. They would do well after one presentation in their dialogue, and then they'd go back after another presentation, and they would find themselves arguing again. So on Saturday night, after the first presentation, they seemed to be doing well. After the second presentation on Saturday night, they started an argument, and they figured that it was no use. So they packed their bags, and they decided to leave the retreat house. Well, as happened, as they were driving out of the retreat grounds, there was a chain across the gate of the retreat house. And so there was no way that they could leave the grounds. So they turned around, they unpacked their bags, brought them back in to the retreat house. And long story short, I think this is God's sense of humor by having that chain across the gate, because this couple then continued to work on their relationship, not only on that weekend, but they themselves became very involved with Retrovi after this, to the point where they have given a good number of weekends themselves and a good number of presentations to help heal other marriages.
Do you know of any other particular anecdotes that stick in your mind?
Several, including us, but another couple that when we were presenting team on a weekend, this couple too was up and down and finally got in a huge argument and decided to drive home, and they had about an hour drive. They got about 10 minutes from home and decided it would be harder to tell their kids that they gave up than it would be to turn around with their heads hanging and walk back in the door of Retrovi. So they turned their car around and they came back and finished the weekend and completed all of the follow-up sessions.
And as far as you know, they're still
and
together?
And as far as we know, they're still together and doing well.
You talked about how in this program you try to teach couples communication tools, how to communicate with their husbands. Can you give us any concrete examples of this?
Absolutely. For example, instead of saying, I did this, this, and this at work today, you might say it, but then how did you feel about that? And being able to share, for example, on the Retrovi weekend, if we discussed conflict and I gave you a list of 12 hot topics that couples might argue about, in-laws, money, work, sex, etc., you might be able to pick one of those topics and form a question around it. How do I feel about our discussions on money? And the important part is not what the issue of money is, but how do I feel about that? Or how do I feel when we discuss this? And so you come to an understanding that, oh, maybe we really are feeling the same way. So now we can sit and calmly have a discussion about it without blaming, accusing. And when you begin from a feeling level, it just sort of diffuses all the anger that you started with in the first place.
Now, coming back, perhaps, shall we say, to the general state of marriage in society today, as you all know, particularly in Western countries, the rate of divorce is incredibly high. Why is that? Why do people give up so quickly, do you think? What more could the church and other bodies be doing to try to bring down that rate of divorce, of separation between couples?
It has a lot to do with the family. John Paul the Great was right when he said, as the family goes, so goes the world. And so Retrovi in the church, I think, is certainly moving in the right direction to curb the divorce rate.
I just think it's so hard, especially in Western countries. We're so bent on instant gratification. And if it's not what I want, I'm going to take it back or return it, because it doesn't fit right, and that's carried right over into our relationships. It's not making me happy, so I'm going to return it and start over. And it's greener grass on the other side of the fence, and in most cases, in mine for sure, you know, in being involved in a nine-month relationship with another woman, it's no different. The problems are the same. You carry the problems with you wherever you go. So you can choose to stay in the relationship you started with and fight for your marriage and work on change in your own personal life and in your relationship, or you can continue to throw them away and start with a new one. And especially in the United States, we're at the point where our society says it's just easier to toss it aside.
That was Frank Laboda, and you also heard the voice of his wife, Julie, and of Father Watt Bracken, speaking about the marriage rescue program called Retrovi.
Made up of these three words that I must say. I just called to say I love you. I just called.
We now broadcast the fifth episode, or chapter, in our ongoing historical series called The Vatican Centuries, where we look at the lives and legends of the people and places that went into the making of the Vatican over the ages. The programme is written by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett, and we're running an episode each Saturday. Today's episode is called The Established Church, and it tells of the building of St. Peter's and the story of St. Helena, who discovers the true cross.
The age of persecution was over, and the great Constantinian peace had begun.
For the Christians, it meant freedom of worship, the restitution of their property, and the exemption from public burdens.
Paganism was still tolerated, but one by one the temples with their idols were abandoned, and soon in their place Christian churches arose on the soil of Rome. In 313, Constantine issued the Edict of Milan, which granted religious freedom to all sects. Christians were thus made eligible for public office.
Lactantius, tutor to Constantine's eldest son, has left us his report.
We believed we had to take this decision, not to deny anyone the faculty of dedicating himself to Christian worship or to whatever religion he feels is most suitable for him. We have therefore decided to revoke all previous restrictions and orders contrary to our clemency, and that whoever chooses to observe the Christian religion may do so freely and openly.
When Constantine built the first St. Peter's, his chief preoccupation was to give the maximum protection and honour to the tomb of the martyr. This he did by enclosing the reliquary in a marble casket, which he then set in a splendid sanctuary, a pergola sustained by six spiral columns sent over from Greece.
They were finely chiselled, almost carved, with vines curving along the spirals. A royal crown hung from the centre of the pergola, probably to hang lamps from, as well as being ornamental. Above it, again, hung a cross. But neither cross nor crown were exactly above the marble structure.
An empty space about 5 metres by 5 was left, so that when Mass was to be celebrated, a movable altar could be placed in front of the tomb.
During Constantine's reign, a period of religious peace, buildings like these were put up in all Christian countries. These martyria, as archaeologists call them, share a similarity. They all have a space around them, so that pilgrims can visit the shrine and hold religious functions, plus the possibility of numerous graves within the construction, both above and below the floor. In many cases, these rooms were quite separate from the sanctuary of the martyr's tomb, but the Vatican sanctuary combined the martyrium with the huge enclosed area of the basilica.
Constantine and his mother Helena were justly proud of their monument, as they recorded in the inscription on the solid gold cross, which later disappeared in one of the various sacks of the basilica. The cross was probably placed on the front of the marble structure, facing the nave. The inscription, fortunately recorded in papal annals, read,
Constantine Augustus and Helena Augusta give to St. Peter this regal abode, surrounded by a hall of regal splendour.
Although her works are known throughout the Christian world, no one knows exactly who Helena was, the first Christian empress and mother of Constantine the Great.
There is a delightful legend that St. Helena was the beautiful daughter of a small-time English king called Cole. Yet another tradition has her keeping an inn. Modern historians believe she was born in Bithynia. Whatever her origins, however, all agree on one point, that she was beautiful, and that the Roman general Constantius Chlorus fell in love with her. Their son was Constantine.
Now, the Roman law of the time did not permit a marriage between people of different social classes, so that Constantius was obliged to repudiate Helena when he became Caesar. On his father's death, however, the young Constantine recalled his mother from obscurity and gave her the title of Nobilissima Femina. When he became emperor, Helena was his empress.
It's not known exactly when Helena became a Christian. Eusebius would have us believe that she was converted by her son. St. Paulinus of Nola prefers to think the contrary, and this is the modern theory. All the events of history begin with a woman, writes one biographer. It is in the nature of things that Helena would have brought Constantine to the faith, rather than the other way round.
Whichever way it was, one thing is clear. While Constantine was only superficially Christian, his mother truly lived the gospel. Throughout her life, she dedicated herself tirelessly to the needs of the poor, bringing consolation wherever she went. She's even known for a most unusual form of charity, opening the doors of prisons. It seems to have been one of her greatest works.
Under his mother's influence, Constantine closed the temples to the pagan gods and opened his treasures to build Catholic churches. Helena was responsible for the building of many of these, especially in the Holy Land, where she went when nearly 80 in search of the true cross.
The finding of the true cross is immersed in legend. Constantine had seen a vision of the cross and rode to victory with it inscribed on his banners. He had himself represented holding a golden globe surmounted by a cross. The cross was now on all the coins of the empire. Helena felt she must seek the original instrument. When she reached Calvary, St. Ambrose tells us, she exclaimed, "Here is the place of battle. Where is the victory? I seek the standard of health and I do not see it."
In a revelation, we're told, she was shown where to dig, in a rock cistern on Mount Calvary. Numerous nails were discovered, and then three crosses, all alike. How to know which one belonged to the Redeemer? St. Macarius, Patriarch of Jerusalem, came to the rescue. He assembled all the people and ordered them to pray. A dying woman was told to touch one of the crosses. Nothing happened. She touched a second. Still nothing. The third cross cured her. It was the Saviour's.
Helena sent the nails to Constantine, but left the cross in Jerusalem. Later, when the infidels took the city, they wanted to burn the sacred relic. So the church decided to break it up to diminish the risk of its entire loss. As the centuries went by, it was split into smaller and smaller fragments and sent all over the world.
Helena took a portion of the cross to Constantine in his new capital. He accepted a small particle and sent a large piece to the city of Rome. Helena took it there personally, and there, not long afterwards, she died. Her son came in time to receive her blessing, and she was laid in a splendid porphyry tomb. But today, no one knows where her relics lie. She has disappeared again into the shadows.
After the discovery of the true cross, Constantine forbade that anyone should ever again be crucified. The cross, which had been once an infamous object, had become a sign of glory.
The programme was written by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett. Well, that's all for today, but we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow. And you can always find our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.